Welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 6 past the hour following news, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis talk with the leader of MSU's renowned School of Packaging, Sue Selke.
We always have to keep in mind that if the package doesn't do its job and the product fails, then the whole system is much worse off.
Then they catch up with MSU's Sultan of Sod, Trey Rogers.
Our job as a researcher is to not react to what's happening today. What's happening today, we should have been reacting to 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And we were. That's our job.
MSU Today begins at 4:06. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis welcome the Director of MSU's School of Packaging, Sue Selke, to the program. Here's President Simon.
Well, it's really a pleasure to welcome Professor Sue Selke, who's the Director of the School of Packaging. And we all encounter packaging every day in positive ways, and sometimes when we're struggling with those caps in frustrating ways. But Michigan State was really a leader in establishing packaging as really an independent area of inquiry 50-plus years ago. So talk about sort of the role that Michigan State played in establishing this as a distinct field of study, and at the same time the evolution a bit over time.
That's right. MSU established the packaging education program in 1952, the first university-based packaging education program in the world. So I think MSU can really lay claim to establishing packaging as an academic discipline. We have been the model for packaging education programs started both other places in the U.S., but even around the world. So We feel a special responsibility to continue to advance the science and technology of packaging.
And so how have things changed over time? What have been some of the bigger leaps that have occurred in the packaging field?
If you go back to the beginning, the biggest leap was probably how plastics have been growing exponentially over the years. I've been on the faculty for 32 years now. When I started here, plastics was the fastest growing packaging material. Plastics is still the fastest growing packaging material and never left that during the whole time period. Lots of ways to do packaging, to make packaging that does more with less. And We always have to keep in mind that the fundamental role of packaging is to get us the products that we want. I think only packaging professors go to the store to buy a package. Everybody else goes to buy a product, and they only pay attention to the packaging most of the time if it fails in some way or when they go to throw it in the garbage.
You know, I think back in its infancy, packaging, I'm going to assume, was attached much to the agricultural components of the university. Is there some truth to that?
The history of the school is it was started as a program within the Department of Forest Products. Mm-hmm. The story that's told is that industry came to John Hanna because they were having lots of problems with shipping things and wanted a more scientific approach to that. And lots of the things they were shipping were in wooden boxes.
Right.
So it made sense to put it in forest products.
Right. So when you look at the past, there's leaders that we've had that I'm familiar with that are connected with the athletic department, individuals like Drayton McLean, who came here and didn't really have a program that fit what he wanted to do. And he took a little bit of logistics, a little bit of packaging, and a little bit of ag, and became one of the nation's leaders in moving food products, agricultural products. But he's an individual that I always look at as an icon. It had to be an exciting time when this whole packaging realm was being built, because it kind of took us from an area where things didn't move efficiently or freely, and Michigan State really became a leader in delivering things to the house, to the workplace, in an efficient manner.
That's true. And one of the challenges these days is with the changing of commerce to much more e-commerce than traditional brick and mortar.
Right.
How does packaging evolve
right.
to fill those new markets?
What are your challenges like today's students? What are they trying to build? Less weight, less product, more. What are some of the challenges that the students are trying to grasp as they go out into the workplace?
Improving sustainability mm-hmm. is a big thing. So that's all about less mass to do the job so you can move it more efficiently. Materials coming from renewable sources. But we always have to keep in mind that if the package doesn't do its job and the product fails, then the whole system is much worse off. It's often useful to invest a little bit more in the package so that the product survives.
Talk with me a bit about, on this vein, about this question of plastics. The film of the age a long time ago, The Graduate, was it's plastics, plastics, plastics. And you would imagine in this day and age, given the environmental concerns around some plastic products not being biodegradable or other things, that it would actually tail off a bit. But you commented earlier that it's actually continuing to grow. But are they different kinds of plastics, more biodegradable, or are they sort of the same challenge we had over the last 30 years?
And the answer is both. Okay. There are new plastics that are truly biodegradable, and I'm not talking about the ones that claim to be biodegradable but really don't perform that way. Mm-hmm. But there is also a lot of increasing use of the more traditional plastics in more complex structures. And that makes things challenging because it's a lot easier to recycle, for instance, a bottle made of one plastic material than it is to recycle a film perhaps made of three or four different types of plastic. But when you look at the whole life cycle, by combining materials in just the amounts that they need to do their specific function, you can very often get much better performance with less material. And most of the impact of products of various kinds, including packaging, comes from making it in the front end, not disposing of it in the back end. And when we compare plastics with some of the older, more traditional materials, because of their light weight, their ease of forming, you can make a plastic bottle at much lower temperatures than a glass bottle, for example. So you save a lot of energy when you make a plastic bottle compared to a glass bottle. So when you look at the overall performance, plastics are often a better environmental choice than something like glass, metal, even paper-based materials in some cases. It's not intuitively obvious by any means.
That's why we need packaging scientists.
Exactly.
To really do that holistic environmental analysis. I want to shift a little bit to Mark's question about food and food safety. So growing up, there have been questions of tampering with drugs. Now food safety is a really important issue of packaging, including what lines are tin cans. So how do you think about and who do you work with on campus on some of these bigger issues such as food safety, food security?
We work with a number of people on campus. The Department of Food Science is an obvious one. CRIS, the Center for Research on Ingredient Safety, we are, I think, building some strong relationships there. One of our faculty members, Dr. Almanar, works a lot on fresh produce, and she works a lot with horticulture. So who we work with depends on what problems we're trying to solve. There are a number of things that packaging can do to both to enhance food safety and also to reduce food waste, because if the food lasts longer in the package, then you're likely not going to throw as much of it away before you eat it. And in many parts of the world, getting the food from the fields to the consumers is the place where there's the greatest food loss. We do pretty well in the U.S. on that regard, mostly because we have very good packaging systems.
Talk a little bit about the excitement of research that we're doing in the packaging school.
We have such a wide variety of research. It's hard to narrow in on any one thing, but I'll pick Dr. Bix, who works at the interface between people and packages, ranging from things like what kinds of packaging design will help an elderly consumer take the right medication at the right time, to things like can the design of sterile packaging for medical devices reduce the likelihood of contamination from the surface when the circulating nurse opens that package in the operating room, mm-hmm. to how can nutrition labels better communicate, especially to children, whether this is a good choice or a not so good choice. She has research going on that uses a little Munchy Monster video game where the children are supposed to choose the right food to feed the monster with, and she's looking at the effects of label design on the choices that kids make in that situation.
And those are things that are being done on our campus right now.
Right now, that's by great. One of our faculty.
That's great. Students, when they come to Michigan State, you know, I've got one out, one in, and one on the way. What are the things that you talk to incoming students that are debating? What do I want to do with my life? Where do I want to go? What are the things that packaging can lead to and would excite a high school student to become a packaging major?
One of the things that our students tell us they really love about our program is that it's science applied in very practical ways with a nice mix of art in the form of design thrown in. So it's kind of the best of worlds between art, business, science, and engineering. It used to be that most of our students came to us around their junior year because they were here at MSU and learned about us from a friend or a roommate or something. One of the big changes I've seen over the years is we have lots of freshmen show up at our door wanting to major in packaging from day one. And we've got just some outstanding students.
I hope Mike was listening.
He should be, because you want to comment about the job placement rate?
Our job placement rate, talking about actual jobs not going to graduate school, is over 90% consistently.
That's impressive.
With salary levels.
With salary levels.
I want to
levels.
Convince Mike to.
Yeah. Come on, Mike.
Our parents around the listening audience who have not focused on packaging as a real thing.
Salary levels are comparable to engineering.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is the really interesting piece of this. This is really, we often talk about STEM programs, and this is really a STEAM program because it includes art as a very important part of it. And I also think listening to students who want to make an impact on the world and still get a great salary, be a part of corporate America in a particular way, that they see packaging in the food safety, food security realm, pharmaceutical safety and security. This idea of helping the world through designing packaging that can work in inner city areas where stores are not in neighborhoods, at what we would experience in more affluent areas where you can just drop in and pick up what you need, to sort of the Africa problem in terms of getting food over long distances. They really see themselves making a big impact in the future.
Yes, they do see themselves, and they do. Once they're out of here, they do make real contributions to the industry, to the growth of knowledge in the field, to getting all of us the things that we like to have when we live our daily lives.
You and I, if we're having this conversation and we get his son into the packaging program, a couple years?
One more year, yeah.
Okay, a couple years. He's got through his freshman year, and he's now going to go admit when ready, and so he's decided on packaging. So he's going to be graduating, let's say, 5 years from now. What do you see it to be the direction of the field, that not just is what's here today, but something that might encourage his son or other people's sons or daughters are listening to really see, you know, sort of a future that's not quite what it is today? What are the big challenges in the field?
Some of the big challenges are the continual problem of accomplishing more with less inputs. So packaging systems that will keep your food fresh longer, that will require less impacts when they're disposed of, that will maybe communicate to you if your cucumber, for example, is growing a little bit of mold. Maybe the package that the cucumber is in will signal to you that that's the case. There's all kinds of things in the area of packages, that intelligent packages that can sense things and communicate to you as a consumer things you need to know about them that are just coming over the horizon. We have some of those now. They're a little too costly, maybe not quite sensitive enough, but I think there's going to be huge leaps and bounds in that whole area of intelligent packaging.
I see refrigerators now have cameras inside. So when you're at the grocery store and if you can't remember if you need milk, you can look on your phone and look right inside your refrigerator. The challenge I have is the expiration dates. Is everything's in my refrigerator and it takes me forever to go through all the items and try to find the little tiny imprint. Is there a way we can get broader expiration dates so that we can clean our refrigerators out a little more efficiently?
And that really is part of what
White is agreeing with me because he's shaking his head as well.
And that's part of what I think the packaging systems of the future will be able to do. Mm-hmm. So we won't have to have just the date because the date's an average.
Right.
Rather, the package may be able to tell you, yes, I'm still good,
released,
or
yeah.
No, I'm not still good, or maybe even eat me within the next 2 days.
Right. They have those beer cans that turn a color when they're not cold anymore. You just kind of need something like that for your bottled vegetables, your milk, everything else that's in there. It makes sense, right?
It does.
Okay, let's get after that one.
We're working on it.
Actually, they are working on it. This is the intelligent packaging. It's really an interesting connection now with chemistry and the nanomaterial development and how you can build in these new materials that have these sensors built in. But I think right now the challenge is at a price that is affordable for your refrigerator.
Right.
It might be cheaper to throw out the milk than buy one right now with a really smart package to tell you what to throw it out. But that's I really think it's coming. And this sort of sense of computer science imaging that's now going to blend with packaging along with smart materials is going to be really exciting for your son to get engaged in. The other thing I would say about a packaging degree is going back to your Drayton McLean model, because he was able to sample things at a time when packaging was still an evolving field.
Right.
And the requirements for graduate programs were less structured than
right.
they are right now.
Almost had to create his own program with what was available at the university
right.
at that
time. And we permit that to happen now in these interdisciplinary programs. But I do think that that students will be engaged much more actively in research programs. Your undergraduates are doing a lot of work. They do a lot of internships with companies to get a real sense of the problems for a Kellogg or a Dow or these big companies and thinking about packaging, much like business students do those kinds of internships in addition to research projects. So packaging is sort of, for a student, is interesting about these real-world problems, but internships with corporations, much like business, and research projects, much like engineering.
Yes. More than 90% of our graduates will have had at least one internship before they graduate. Some will have actually had two. And they're all paid internships. We don't allow voluntary internships. And we're working hard at increasing the involvement of undergraduates in research. Our alumni association, beginning last year, funded some undergraduate research experiences so we can actually pay undergrads to work in labs doing real research and getting their names on publications in many cases.
That's great. We appreciate you joining us. The only thing you don't need an expiration date on is Oreo cookies. Those tend to go out of the house very fast. But
yes, I don't think I've had any in my house last till they got stale.
It's great work. I think it's exciting for students coming in. The research you're doing is something that changes the world. And we appreciate you being part of Team MSU and the work you do every day.
It really is extraordinary. So thanks, Sue.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
That was the director of MSU's School of Packaging, Sue Selke, talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com or WKAR.org. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis welcome MSU's Sultan of Sod, Trey Rogers, to the program. And here's President Simon.
Well, we're really pleased to have Professor Trey Rogers with us, one of the leading innovators and experts in the area of turf grass, particularly related to fields, athletic fields, and golf courses, and those kinds of things. So, Trey, it's really exciting to have you. And we were just talking about the weather and the effect of having to adjust for these unusual conditions, water, heat this year for golf courses and other athletic fields.
Right. You know, I've been here since 1988, and I can remember 1988 was a very bad drought year, and starting to remind me a little bit of that time. That time frame, also 1999, you know, I get a lot of questions every day, you know, how's my grass? Is my grass going to be okay? You know, it's interesting. I work over in plant soil and microbial sciences with some just world-class scientists, and it's quite interesting. I know that when we all go to our parties, they say what they do for a living and maybe can't even think of a question. I say what I do for a living. Somebody says, I got a question about my backyard. So, yeah, I understand that. And at the same time, you know, the advice I always give them is grass is pretty smart. It's gone into a period of dormancy. You know, just if you don't want to water it, don't. It'll be fine. It's Michigan. We'll get some rain. And it's just kind of the worst thing you can do is kind of leave it in between. So it really doesn't know what it's supposed to do. But never end. Challenges never end. I've loved every minute of it here.
When you think about, you know, some of the challenges facing industries like golf courses, we've got some parts of the state that have a lot of water, some that have none, different fungi, mold, weeds, all those kinds of things. But let people know sort of how research factors into the answers that you give every day when somebody calls up and asks about these questions.
Well, they do. We, you know, our job as a researcher is to not react to what's happening today. What's happening today, we should have been reacting to 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And we were. You know, we were figuring out how to build more sustainable athletic fields and putting green so that people could put grasses in there when it was time, when the technology caught up with us. And I can give you a specific example, but that's our job. We have been ahead of what Michigan needs for quite a while now. Dr. Vargas developed a grass along with his his technicians that is a creeping bent grass that is dollar spot resistant. And they knew they were going to have that. Why? We're not going to be able to use fungicides. We're not going to have the use of water that we've had, you know, at our disposal for the last 40 years, the next 40 years going. We've got to develop sustainable grasses. We've got to get them put into our recreational areas and even our home lawns. That's our job. We hired a Emily Merowitz, Dr. Merowitz. We hired her, 5 years ago, as a molecular physiologist for exactly the thing that you would be thinking. You know, someday she'll be putting genes into turf grass that will require less water. Is it finished? No, we're starting. We won't be finished even long after I'm gone from here.
As brilliant as you are and as much as you're respected across the globe, it's the people that you leave behind that really create the legacy. And as I've had an opportunity to be involved, especially in the athletic realm, you bring up your name and there are people that have studied under you, learned from you. Talk about some of those roles, those people. I know you can't mention them all, but give
some
examples.
You make me feel old. But at the
same
time,
we are, Trey.
We start right here, you know, in our own campus with, you know, a young person, or not young person anymore. They're all young people to me, I guess. But Amy Foudy, who has jumped into this role now, 10, 12, 14 years, and has just done an outstanding job of, you know, if I look at our athletic facilities, of course, you and Greg Iani have, and President Simon have provided her the funds, but boy, look what she's done with them.
Right.
And just a great, great job, and love sending students to her to learn from her, because I know that propels them on. You know, we've got people in just about every walk of life now, Major League Baseball, National Football League, you know, quite proud of all of them. You're right, Mark, I couldn't list them all if I tried, but, you know, it is very gratifying to even get a three-sentence note from them just to say how they're doing and, you know, what the university meant to them, and that brings some tears to your eyes a lot of days.
It is. It's fun to go to a place and bring up your name and see the eyes light up. You can be on a golf course in California. You can be on one down in the South, almost anywhere, and the name Trey Rogers. If you didn't have an impact on the individuals that work there, you have an impact on what the golf course looks like, and that's a great credit.
Well, you know, and that's a very big title to take, but I must say, and Dr. Simon knows this, it's a team effort. You know, that is a big, big team over there at Michigan State in our turf grass program. Jim Crum, Kevin Frank, Tom Nicolai, Emily Merowitz, Joe Vargas, Dr. David Smitley, an entomologist. You know, nothing will scare a turf grass person more than an insect that they can't identify, and yet here comes Dr. Smitley to save the day time and time again. So it's a big team effort.
You're also the, this is my athletic director hat now, a parent of a former student athlete. Talk about that experience, kind of stepping out of your occupation and having to be a dad.
Oh, yeah, like the day I said something, I said I wanted to ask if I wanted to take Rebecca and her friend to go get ice cream, and we had to determine whether or not we were breaking an NCAA rule, right? No,
Always good to ask.
That's right. I knew at least to ask. No, it was a wonderful experience with Rebecca, you know, and she's finished year three of dental school and at the University of Maryland, and has really done very well. And, you know, I know that all that time spent with Coach Joseph and the softball team in the Department of Intercollegiate Athletics shapes her every day. You know, I remember her coming home one day and saying, "Dad, I met a guy. I think he's going to do pretty good things. He's pretty amazing." I said, "What's his name?" "Kirk." "What's his last name?" "Cousins." "We were talking about chemistry together." Yeah, I think so, Rebecca. He might do pretty great things. So you never know who you get introduced to there. And she's one of those kids that took advantage of every situation. Her mother and I are quite proud of her.
Well, I think part of it, it goes to both the coach and the individual team, and what athletics does beyond sort of W's and L's, because almost everything is judged by W's and L's and not necessarily by graduation rates and impacts on, you know, on young people. But also the Smith Center, the way in which Mark has led the department, teams are not as isolated among themselves and only talk to people on their team or whatever. There really is a sense where a softball player can talk to a football player, and and they can have these conversations and learn about one another without it sort of being only softball talks to baseball because their fields are next to one another.
Right.
And nobody talks to football because they're all by themselves.
I think some of Rebecca's greatest moments might not have been necessarily on the practice field or even the game field, even though she loved every minute of it, but might have been in the training room as she was getting her arm worked on. And there she was next to a cross-country runner, and they formed, or a golfer, and they formed a relationship for life. You know, I know that at other universities, you oftentimes think, I even see it just down the street. You know, they've put some of their facilities to where they've isolated the softball team in one place, or the lacrosse team in a place or whatever. And you're right. Then all of a sudden they don't get to intermingle. And I think when Rebecca heard something about that, to me, she said, no, Dad, that's the best part of it. That's the best part of it. Don't ever change that.
We live in a world where we tend to specialize in everything. Everybody has their little segment, and it is good to let things breathe and allow student-athletes not only to interact with other student-athletes but interact with other students on campus. The things that you can pick up from so many wonderful things that are happening here are extremely valuable to our kids, and we encourage that every day.
Right. Well, with 48,000 students, you know, I always tell every mother and father that ask me, I said, your son's going to find, or daughter's going to find anything they want to find, you're on this campus.
Yeah.
And I said, and if whatever group they want to be in, there's going to be there. And I've seen so many young people just absolutely blossom while they were here. It's fun to watch.
So take me out to Mount Hope and Farm Lane and the plot of grass that's out there and all the guys that are in carts bending over,
right,
touching things out there.
It says turf grass on it.
Yeah.
What's
going
on out there?
Well, a lot of support from the university, I can tell you that. You know, you
and
guys.
Also from the Turf Grass
and
Foundation.
The Turf Grass Foundation, exactly. For years and years and years, the Michigan Turf Grass Foundation has raised money for us to the tune of, you know, in-kind donations of well over $500,000 a year. So, you know, we're a world-class facility. We make sure that we're aware of that every day when we're out there. You never know who's going to come by. It started off as 10 acres when I first came there in 1988, 65 acres now. It's run by Mark Collins and Jesse Scholl, and they do a great job. And Mark, you're exactly right. You do not know what's going to be happening out there. You know, there was a time period where we were trying to figure out how to grow grass indoors.
Right.
We were trying to figure out how to put it into modules.
Now, the Silver Dome, right?
For the Silver Dome, and then eventually for Spartan Stadium.
Right.
You know, and then there was a time when we were trying to figure out how to build a better putting green and an athletic field, and we've turned that, particularly those athletic fields, we gave that formula to every high school in Michigan to where they have the ability at a very low cost to go from 10 games a year to 50 games a year, but still be on natural grass. So, you know, we've done our job in my mind.
As you watched all the soccer matches going on across the country here just recently, grass in NFL facilities, many of which didn't have grass as a normal surface. What's your report card like for the soccer tournament?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think for the soccer tournament, you know, I'd like to say that Michigan State University's played a big role in you know, providing or promoting the idea that we can have a good grass surface to play our sports on, and that there is no excuse for not having that. And we can show you the technological aspects of building the field. We can also provide you the educated field manager that will make the decisions that will make sure that field continues to perform. So I think we've done our job. I actually think, you know, to be honest, some of our work in the 90s made the artificial turf people come up with better artificial turf fields.
Sure.
We sent the volley back across like a screaming shot down the, you know, down the back line that said, you better get better.
Yeah. It comes with its challenges, but there is nothing better than playing a soccer match, playing a football game on a freshly cut natural grass surface.
Right. No, and you know, that's what keeps the young men and women kind of excited about it. Why? Because they're perfectionists that have finally found a place where they can toil and never get bored.
Make a difference. It's more than cutting the grass.
It'll make a difference, and as soon as that first divot goes in there, they've got to get back after it to make it perfect again. No, it's been good, and you know, we're quite proud. We've got our imprint all over the collegiate area, Iowa State, Arizona, University of Michigan, down in Alabama and Florida. So, you know, our Spartan grads are everywhere.
You know. You've been engaged with the Beijing Olympics. Do you have a role in Rio, or is that they're just using the technology and don't need you anymore?
Well, you know, I have not been involved in the Olympics since 2008, and our involvement there, Michigan State at Beijing, we were not involved in England, and we're not involved in Rio. But, and I don't know if we'll get involved in the World Cup, because now we're going to a couple of countries that turf is not a big deal. You know, I would not expect to get involved in England. Why? Very sophisticated country, got turf grass down. They've been going after it for a long time. They don't need any quote-unquote help. Now you go to a place like China or Athens, Greece, like we did, they're not as sophisticated. They could use our help. So what's going to happen in Qatar? What's going to happen in Moscow? You don't know, that they may need our help, and so we'll be available if that comes along. I personally have been focusing a lot more on my work on golf course renovations lately. I've enjoyed that quite a bit, and the challenges that come along with that. As you know, I like the game of golf quite a bit.
Well, if you can get some grass that would help my swing, it would be much appreciated.
Yeah, I haven't figured that out yet.
but describe for folks what you see as the challenges of golf course renovation, why it's capturing your imagination.
Well, President Simon, for me, the idea is sustainability. Okay, so I have, about 5 or 6 years ago, I sat there looking, realizing that, for the game of golf, it's not necessarily what's happening right now, but it is, we have to develop methodology to be able to create sustainability. And by that, I mean, there's going to come a day when the grasses are available that can go 60 days without water, 90 days without water. You could say that we have a couple of them now, but they're even going to get better than that. And so now what's missing is how to readily convert those grasses from what we have now to what we need without having very much downtime, without having losing any money, and that our golf courses that are dependent upon daily play can actually do it very quickly. Again, probably not going to be absolutely necessary for a few years, but when it's time, the information will be there.
So what project right now helps you understand that future? You're working on
I've been working a lot in Detroit. And Detroit in 2014, they lost due to a terrible winter. Most of the greens in Detroit were killed. And during that time, we began to look at the ideas of how to rebuild these. I had a particular grass that I wanted to use to rebuild them. And then at the same time, the idea of providing a better environment, whether it meant drainage, whether it meant cutting down a few trees to allow some sunshine. And every time, there have been several courses in the Detroit area that we've done this with, and it's improved them dramatically. And every time that we do this improvement, their fungicide bills go way down. Their water bills go way down. So I know that we're on the right track. Then we take, and every time we do one of these projects, I, of course, see one or two more holes that we don't have answers for, and I bring them back to the research center, and away we go.
And so that's part of the answer to sort of Mark's question about what happens out in the corner of Mount Hope and College, is that there's a plots that represent problems from around the world.
That's right.
Is that and so there's a set that there that are problems that we've already identified and trying to figure out how to solve them. And there's another set of plots anticipating sort of this different future, that if you were to pull golf course superintendents or the Amy Fowdies of the world together, they would not necessarily be on the horizon for them, because they're worried about next 1 to 3 years about what's happening and how to handle climate variability, how to worry about unusual circumstances or a new critter that arrives on the scene that we identify by the entomologists. These are the sort of the, and also then everybody's feeling pressure about cost and pesticides.
Sure.
are a very costly commodity. So there's those, and then there's these sort of imagining the future plots you have over there.
Right.
Is that the...
You couldn't... I know I couldn't have said that better than you did, and there's the reason you're the president.
She knows us all.
That's right. There's the reason she's the president right there. Yeah. And
but that was really the commitment, I think, of the Turfgrass Foundation, because they believed in you and your colleagues.
Oh, yeah. We've had
that, that they believed you, that they had to stretch a bit to want to get out there in that future
space. We've had
space.
To stretch their imagination a few times sitting in that boardroom of, yeah. you know, trust us, this is something you're going to need done before it's over with. Yes, absolutely. And to their credit, you know, couldn't be more supportive, as you know.
But I think that's really a lesson about, you know, 'cause it's sometimes hard to see what research universities do. And why this stuff is so important to do. Why can't we be a little bit more just in time like the business community and
right.
cut costs by being just in time? And I think that if you can go out to college and Mount Hope and see why it takes time to find answers. They're not just readily apparent by dumping more stuff,
right.
on the bug or the grass. That was the old way. The new way is much more difficult to pull off.
Right, and it's quite interesting. You know, we have a lot of people that want to change their career. Maybe they start off that they want to be a practitioner in the turf industry. Then they kind of catch the research bug, and they come out there and they start working for us. Or it could be just people looking for summer jobs come out and working for us. But the first thing we tell them is there's no tea times here. And they look at us kind of funny. Because I say, you know, we don't care if you got to have it ready for a golfer at 8 o'clock. If you walk out there, you know, there's a piece of land there that you mow it wrong or you do something wrong to it, you might ruin 10 years worth of research. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, you just come off, get off the mower, and walk in and ask somebody, because we don't have any tea times. We can wait till tomorrow to mow it if we have to. So it is, you're exactly right. There are a lot of things going on.
I want to cycle back to the athletic field question. I know that your work with Amy has brought a lot of people here, not simply to see the place out on College Road, but also the experimentation that Mark has permitted, given Amy a lot of latitude, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. really, to be part of the demonstration project of your work, really on, you know, really early adapter to lots of things that have proven to be something that now is in high school athletic fields,
right,
and other
right.
things. The tire issue was one of the early ones.
Yeah, that's very early one, right? From rubber, from tires, but then also how to take an athletic field, just a typical Michigan athletic field, and for a relatively low cost, as you know, if you think about rebuilding that field out of sand might be $400,000, for about 20% of that, can build a field that will put up with the same amount of wear and tear that a sand-based field would, which means 50 events per year. And that's the kind of, you know, that kind of work is something that Amy was an early adopter on, as well as the young man Alec Kovaleski, who is now a professor at Oregon State but was a wrestler at Michigan State right. before he came to work, you know, came to school with me. And there's a work ethic for you, boy, I'll tell you.
Well, but I think this idea that, and right now, one of the things that people probably don't notice in their athletic fields, or, you know, if you think about the stress on high schools or communities, park and rec,
right.
other things, to fix things. And sometimes when you don't fix them, they become very unsafe for kids.
Right.
Not only in terms of injuries and knees and ankles, but they become too hard,
mm-hmm.
and so the risk of head injuries and those things all goes up. And the fact that technology is something that sort of has been given away in some ways to these high schools to use and still reduces their cost, I think, is one of those benefits of research that people don't always recognize, because there's not a big sign that said Research Project Trey Rogers Field. It just is. It just is. I mean, it's just part of what we do in this sort of land-grant spirit.
Right.
And you can go all around the state and see examples of being able to do something at a higher quality for 20% less because somebody called you up, or they came over to see Amy or came out to the corner, and this is how you do it. Just go off and...
Right.
Is that...
That's exactly right. Every day, you know, anybody that's out there at the corner of Mount Hope and Farm Lane knows that somebody's going to walk in with a question, and that you could end up, you know, changing their world, so to speak. Shepherd High School. We can begin to name a lot of them that have just come to us and said, we need to fix this. And now all of a sudden, that's the pride of their community, is that high school field, and how easy it can put up with all of the pressure of events that they put on there. So you're exactly right. And I don't think about it in the horn, you know, in the idea of tooting our horn, but I just think about it as, well, that's our job. Get the field ready.
I'd like to close off with this. You have earned a position in your field that many aspire to in their walk of life. And it's based on respect. It's based on your expertise. It's based on how people trust you. It's based on the compassion, I think, that you have with the individuals. I don't think you'll ever retire, but if you do, and your daughter was to step to the mic and introduce you, what would bring tears to your eyes to hear her say about you?
Her stepping to the mic, Mark. I mean, just stepping up to the mic, I'll start crying like a baby. You know, I'm one of those guys that cries quite easily in those situations. But, all three of those children, I haven't even mentioned, you know, the other two that I have. I have one who's actually majoring in comm arts, and one that's got a degree in physiology and on her way, I think, to med school, just finished a master's degree in human genetics down the road at the University of Michigan. So they've grown up in these halls. You know, they grew up running around in these areas. And, I know that they'd all three just say, you know, it's my dad was green and white all the way. And I think that's what they'd say. And that, everything we did had, you know, realized that Michigan State University was there with us, they're backing us. And like I said, I loved every step of the way. Still going. Not planning on retiring. Please don't let that get out.
I'm not suggesting it.
Don't let that get out.
No. And besides that, you often protect Mark's teams when he has a golf challenge.
Well,
a few years gone by.
That's right. Now that's down the road. But I'm like I said, I'm willing to play there. that Mark knows he can call me at any time. And I've really enjoyed it. Whether it be the football team, the golf team, any of those, anytime I can help, I'm gonna softball, baseball.
We
step
had fun
in there.
Michigan a couple times, though, didn't we?
Yeah.
The athletic director golf challenge.
Yeah.
And you know, when somebody brings a professor of turf grass, you know, they think you were studying the grass, you know, for the way the ball was going to break on the green, instead of your golf prowess.
And there's a neuroscientist down there at Michigan named Thad Polk, and the truth of the matter is we became good friends after that. And when my daughter wanted to go to the U of M for human genetics, he introduced us to who we need to be introduced to. It all worked together. We're all together here.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That was MSU Professor of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences Trey Rogers talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com or WKAR.org.
The sun beaming down between the leaves.
Raising the glasses again, maybe can you dig it?
And the birds darting in and out of the tree.
Raising the glasses again, maybe can you dig it? Everything here is so clear, you can see it.
WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from The Spartan Life. Here's one of my favorite nuggets of wisdom. Every medium has a point of view. Challenge it. Brian Kay, a Twitter friend, sent me the following tweet this week. MSU Scott W., how do I know I can believe what you're saying? My answer? Ask around. If you hear differently, tell me. In the coming weeks, the political campaign season will be kicking in. We will again be inundated by half-truths, scary sound bites, and unsubstantiated charges, all designed to generate fear, uncertainty, and doubt about some candidate's opponent. Hundreds of millions of dollars will be spent to try and convince us not to vote for someone else. By the same token, we are daily bombarded with messages designed to get us to do something, buy something, like something, hate something. The more shocking the images, the more lurid the charges, the better. When you find a little voice inside your head saying, "Wow, I can't believe what I just saw," listen to it. Challenge everything, but be willing to do your homework. The world is complicated. The issues we face don't have easy solutions. If they did, we would have already figured them out. We all bring our own prejudices and self-interest to the table, too. Preconceived notions about how things should be can easily dominate our own thinking. Do your homework. Special interests, and that's not necessarily a bad term, we all have special interests, spend time and effort to try to convince us that their interests are in our best interest. That may or may not be true. You get to decide whether or not it is. But try to understand all points of view before judging. That often takes work. The truth isn't always clearly visible. You have to peel off layers of hyperbole, obfuscation, and misinformation to find it. The people who create commercial messages and political attack ads count on the fact that most of us won't bother to fact check. Their biggest fear is that we will. The same goes for whatever positions you take, decisions you make, actions you take. They will be challenged. And that's a good thing. Questions and criticism can help us clarify our own thought processes. In some cases, this may modify our point of view. In the best case, it will force us to do our own homework to ensure that our actions are in line with our values. If they aren't, have the courage to go through the sometimes painful process of changing them. Your homework may reinforce your confidence in staying the course, or it may inspire you to explore a new direction. The worst thing we can do is to do nothing. Be an informed voter, consumer, leader, team member, and friend. Challenge everything, especially your own paradigms. Do your homework. You won't make everyone around you happy all the time, but you will make better decisions and most likely enjoy more productive outcomes. So, Brian, don't take anything I say at face value. Challenge it and do your homework. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.